today's episode is a little bit different because I have a guest expert, and we recorded this podcast episode a few weeks ago now, but I thought it was a good time to introduce it because we have previously talked about dog parent guilt. And if you haven't listened to that episode yet, I would give that one a listen, because I think dog parent guilt and burnout are connected. There are a few reasons for burnout, and we're going to go through that in the podcast episode this week. But I think it's just something that is a big part of a lot of people's lives. And I've had burnout, and Amber, who I'm talking to on this episode, has also had burnout, and her story comes from having had to work through the burnout and understand that she'd got it in the first place and all the things. So we touch on that in today's episode. And I just thought it was super useful. I don't actually think this is only relevant to dog parents, this episode. I think it would be relevant to everyone. This, whether you have a dog, a pet or not, I think this episode's a big one because we're talking about something that is so common now in a lot of people's lives, and that awareness isn't there. I think as soon as we become aware of some of the things that we're going to talk about in today's episode, you'll see the benefits of it. So today's expert is Dr. Amber Parks. She is a veterinarian turned burnout and stress coach who knows firsthand what it feels like to feel overwhelmed, exhausted, and stuck in a career you once loved. After facing her own burnout, she now helps high-achieving professionals from around the globe reclaim their energy, confidence, and joy without needing to quit their jobs or change careers. Originally from Massachusetts and now based in Central Florida, Dr. Parks is passionate about guiding others towards true life-work balance through virtual coaching. She specialises in helping clients overcome imposter syndrome, stop people-pleasing, and build sustainable lives that feel fulfilling, not draining. When she's not coaching, you'll find her reading, walking her dog River, hanging out with her two cats, Sprout and Bean, or off travelling with her significant other, Todd. So, let's get the episode started. Welcome to The Mindful Dog Parent, the podcast for overwhelmed and anxious dog owners who are doing their best but still feel like they're getting it all wrong. I'm Sian, a trauma-informed coach and ethical dog trainer. I created this podcast because dog parenting isn't always cute reels and perfect walks. Sometimes it's tears after training, guilt in the quiet moments, or just feeling like you're the only one struggling. If you've ever said, I love my dog, but this is really hard, you're in the right place. Each week, I'll bring you calm, compassionate guidance to help you build confidence, regulate your emotions, and reconnect with your dog, even when things feel messy. Because you're not failing, you're just overwhelmed, and you don't have to figure this out on your own. Welcome to the podcast, Amber. Thank you very much for joining me.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
I've got a few questions. This is kind of just chatting through what burnout is. So your stress and burnout coach, and we'll kind of talk about the differences between the two in a sec. So it's kind of talking through that burnout, what it looks like, and helping my listener who's listening right now to understand what it looks like and what it could actually mean for them. So I really want you guys listening to have a think about what we talk through and see if anything resonates. And we're going to give you some tips at the end to take away and work on. So keep listening, because we are going to give you some practical tools as well as figuring out what it looks like and what it actually is. Because a lot of the time, like for me personally, I didn't know or recognize that I'd got burnout. And I think that's quite common, isn't it, Amber? So yeah, quite a common thing. So first things first, what is burnout and what does it look like for people?
It is something that, and I'm with you as well, I experienced burnout, was right in the middle of it and had no idea. So stress is really, by definition, supposed to be a much smaller period of time that we're feeling those stressful things. So that might be at work, maybe at home, and it's a small period of time, maybe a couple days, a small event, and then life in theory goes back to normal. But burnout is that sustained stress that can go on for weeks, months. I mean, I was in burnout for years before I realized it. And I do think it looks a little bit different for everyone. However, there are some common signs that I see in just about everyone that experiences it. And it starts in the workplace, but it seeps into our personal life for sure. And when we're at work, things like, yeah, you're stressed, you're overwhelmed, but it's almost that feeling of like we can't get our head above water. Like you're always trying to push harder and you just never get ahead. You just kind of get more work. And with that, you start to be cynical, maybe about your work experience, maybe your coworkers, your boss. You almost lose that passion for your job and things that you got excited about, that you started your job and you really enjoyed, like do not let you up anymore. It's almost like you feel like a completely different person. And it can certainly manifest in a lot of physical symptoms, which I experienced too. And I mean, I was getting like 2 or 3 migraines a week and somehow pushing through thinking that was, I don't know, normal. But other GI issues, muscle aches and pains, like all those things it's that stress that's prolonged that we just aren't managing really well. And so it really does manifest through our body too. I will say, and I hear this a lot too, it has a level of exhaustion that rest doesn't seem to cure. And it's like people will say, I'm completely exhausted. I come home from work, I sleep, I wake up, I go back to work, like, but they're never fully rested or feel like refreshed from that. And I think that's important to note because many people think, oh, I have a long weekend coming up, or I have a vacation coming up or holiday, and I'll be fine after that. And we might spend half of that break just sleeping to try to catch up, but we never really get ahead. And then we go back to work and that same sense of like dread going to work that I kind of say like sucking your soul. Like it just feels like every part of your being is like you would want to be anywhere else but going to work. And I think those are pretty common things that I see, I experience, and I hear from a lot of my clients too.
Yeah, I've related to a lot of the things that you said there. I remember when I started to feel exactly the same things that you'd said about kind of maybe for me, it was like resentment towards certain things. So I can totally relate to some of those things in my previous roles. So this is going back a few years for me as well. So came from a corporate background and I was in that for 10 years and I flitted from job to job to job because I was thinking, I didn't realize I was in burnout either. So I was thinking, oh, I'm getting like resentful towards this and I don't enjoy this anymore. And I even got to the point where I was feeling sick when I was physically sick when I was going into work. And I was just like, just pushing through, I've got to keep going to work. I've got to pay the bills. I've got to, you know, it's the pressure that you feel and it's the conflict, I think, there between the two. So you don't realize you're in burnout for one. You have all these physical symptoms and mental health stuff as well. So I've had anxiety for years and it was unmanaged for a while. Again, this is going back a while for me as well. So maybe about 5 years ago, maybe longer. And yeah, so I can totally relate to some of those things that you've mentioned. And something I was thinking about as well, when you were talking about that, about going on holiday and having some time off and thinking I'll be fine afterwards. It'll all be good. I've had some rest. One thing I've noticed from people who I've known, like friends or colleagues, when they're in that kind of pushing through state at work, so there's a lot of stuff going on in the body, and we'll talk about kind of how maybe it can affect the nervous system as well in a second. But when they start to kind of wind down and they have that break, they get ill. So I don't know if that's a potential thing. It just made me think about that. So I've had colleagues get sick with tonsillitis quite a lot, and it's something that's recurring, and it seems to happen when they're in wind down mode, or they have a throat infection or a cold or something. It's like, oh, it's just my luck. I've had a holiday. I've just gone on holiday and I'm getting ill. So I don't know if that potentially could be a link as well.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, definitely like a winding down of the nervous system. And I also think it's like our body, like, okay, here's a red flag here. Here's another red flag here. And we're just kind of like, just keep, you know, we just keep going and we ignore that. And so I will say those red flags get bigger and more severe, if you will, the more we ignore them. So I do think, I almost think it's a way of like, okay, we slow down, but like, I know that you want to try and do stuff on your holiday or your week off. Like, this is going to keep you down. This is almost like how I think of it, but I have heard that and I've experienced that. Yeah. Myself.
Yeah. Yeah. It just, when you were saying some of those things, I was thinking, oh, there are people I know who potentially are in burnout, and they wind down, and then the wind down moment they start to get ill, because then their immune system's just like, ah, can't cope. Yeah. So like, kind of touching on that and kind of going into the nervous system stuff, and what kind of happens with that brain and body state and the nervous system all linked together. So when there's a prolonged state of burnout, what then would start to happen? So you said the red flags get bigger and bigger. So what kind of things do you think would you say are the biggest things that are coming out with that?
Yeah, I think sometimes the symptoms or signs that we experience get intensified. So what I hear a lot and I experienced is that fight or flight mode, and you're kind of chronically in it. And part of my career, I worked in ER. So you had to, you know, be on your game and be ready to move and think and do stuff. So it almost came with the territory. And I thought that that was it. I thought it was working ER, but I realized my nervous system was so dysregulated that when I would get off a shift and I'd go home, it was like unplugging a light, you know, like I just physically, mentally, if anyone listening can relate, if you ever leave work and you realize you're halfway home and you haven't turned the radio on, you're not talking, you're like, you almost just need less stimulation. That's not normal either. And so, but when your body's in that, just like that chronic cortisol level is elevated, and that stress hormone, it is tough to come down off of it. And interestingly, I've had a lot of people that are like, I'm scared to slow down because I don't know what that's going to feel like, because I'm so used to that fight or flight, which when you're at work, it just feels like maybe an increased heart rate. Your breathing is a little bit more shallow, and it's kind of subtle. Like, especially the more you experience it, it almost becomes the norm. So it's hard for us to differentiate that too. But I think, you know, we have to, yeah, kind of come slowly down off of that. And when I did that, I felt so like in a tailspin. Like, I felt like my brain turned off. I felt like I couldn't do things. So there's definitely a winding down of that, but it goes to show you, like, that is your body's response to it, to an actual threat, like a tiger or a bear chasing you. That way back in, you know, way back when, caveman days, that's what that fight or flight was for. It was for short spurts of time to get you out of danger. The problem is, danger for us is like sending an email or doing a presentation.
I saw somebody write that the other earlier. Somebody said it's like a meme that's out there. Yeah. And they said, like,
my nervous system's telling me fight or flight when I'm just trying to send an email. Like, that's not, but it's just our life now, isn't it? It's just how it, it's become the norm, and it shouldn't be, because where's the end point? And I don't want it to be like that. That's why these conversations are happening. So yeah, that's just something, it made me think about that earlier on. Sending an email is triggering fight or flight. Normal activities that we're doing is triggering fight or flight, because our bodies is, it's telling us we're in danger. It goes back to the what it was actually meant for before evolution took over.
Yeah. And I think too, like, I experienced, you mentioned anxiety. I experienced that too. And it seemed to be the worst when that fight or flight was the worst, because you're just so on edge as it is. And then you add in anxiety and they just kind of feed off each other. Mm. So I noticed when I was like, my burnout was the worst, my anxiety was the worst. So, and that by itself just amps you up as it is. So it, yeah, it's really, and again, I think it happens slowly over time. And what I think is interesting about burnout is that we end up, you know, we've gotten this far in our careers or life or all the things we're doing. And so we should be able to keep going if we got this far, I think, is some of the mentality. So we think, you know, like, well, I did it before, I can just keep doing it. And that, yeah, there's no, we keep moving the finish line, and that's where we run into problems.
The goalposts change, the finish line keeps getting further. Yeah. It's, and it's just what is that end point? Where is it going to get to that point where over in the UK, it's one of those things where we're trying to convince the government that there is a mental health crisis going on right now, and burnout is going to be playing a big part in some of that, with these things that you've said is happening in our bodies, and we're in a cycle. So the anxiety feeds the burnout, feeds the stress, feeds the anxiety, feeds the burnout, feeds the stress. And yeah, it's hard to try to kind of make that a big highlighted point over here. I don't know if it's the same where you are, if there's everything in the health system's kind of different setups and that kind of thing. So we've got the NHS in the UK, but it's hard to convince workplaces that it's a big thing, that you need to focus on supporting employees through mental health and all of that kind of thing. So yeah, don't know what it's like over your side of the pond.
I think there's definitely awareness there. And my personal take is, you know, I've seen a lot in the veterinary field itself, like the awareness of mental health challenges, because our suicide rate is 2, 3, 4 times higher than the average public. And so the awareness is there. But what I have found is some of the bigger companies are putting programs or things in place that, if you ask me, they're checking a box. It's not really, you know, like, hey, we do this thing, but it's like, okay, well, what's the end result? Like, what are your statistics? What are your, because truthfully, if you dive into any field, you can see burnout costs some money, and, you know, mm-hmm. absenteeism, people that leave their jobs, now we have to get someone else in and train them. Like, it benefits businesses to put this at the forefront, because if we don't have a healthy team and employees, then whatever we're trying to do, whatever your job is going to be affected, and that's going to cost people money. You know, that's one way to look at it. Yeah,
I agree. So it then kind of feeding into dog parenting and dogs and that kind of thing. So we've kind of touched on how it can impact work and life. It starts to feed into how it starts to impact your life generally. How does burnout impact that ability to connect with other people and our dogs? So that could feed, from my perspective, being a trainer, how it impacts the training sessions, how it impacts actually consistency is a big word that is used a lot, but actually getting that consistency there and actually being able to physically do it, that's the thing that I want to try to support my listener right now, so they can take away something and actually think about how it might be impacting them. So how's burnout having that impact on the connection?
Yeah, it definitely is multifaceted. And I do think that we may not be aware of how much it affects our pets. Like, you know, you think maybe you had a hard day at work and you come home. Like, our pets are pretty intuitive and can read us very well. So anyone that has pets has had probably experiences with that. So besides just the feeding off of our energy, your capacity and resilience and ability to handle like another task on your list, I think is one thing. And so the other thing that I find that creeps in, and it did for me, is that I have a hard time if I can't do something 110% and do it perfect and do it, you know, you tell me to train my dog 3 or 4 times a week, 15 minutes a day, and I can't do that, then I don't do it at all. Like, there's no middle ground. So it's that perfectionism that tells us we're not doing it right and it's not going to work. So then we don't do it. And then the guilt, that's where the guilt comes in of, I'm a horrible pet owner. I, you know, can't even take care of this dog. This poor dog is looking at me for support. And so it's just like having, you know, like a human friend. We have to show up for ourselves first so that we can really give as much as we can to our canine companions and be able to, you know, really have that calmness about us for that training too, I think.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I think it's, so for my clients and everyone that I work with, there's that element of, I need to put everyone else first. And I'm guilty of that as well. So I've had those things, setting boundaries hasn't been something I've been very good at in the past. And that's something I know that can impact burnout. And I think that's a lot of what happens. You put everything else before yourself. And if you, like you say, if you haven't thought about yourself, if you're not feeding yourself, doing self-care things, trying to have that awareness, and it's not big, huge 30-minute rituals every half day or anything like that, like multiple times a day. It's trying to break everything down into small things that we can do, and that's kind of where we're going to go on to towards the end of our chat, so people can take some stuff away with them, which will be awesome. But yeah, it's looking after yourself to show up then and be able to show up for your dog and do it effectively. So having that consistency, and consistency just means doing the same thing from my perspective, and showing and guiding that dog. This is what we do in this situation. When somebody comes to the door, this is what we do. That's consistency for me. It's not doing stuff that takes you an hour and you're drill sergeant. It's, yeah. So, and not feeling like it's overwhelming. So then you don't procrastinate. You don't think, I can't do this. You then don't feel guilty as a result. So that then leads you to start to see little subtle changes in that connection with your dog. They can listen to you more. They've picked up on how you're feeling, and you might feel a little bit more regulated now.
Yeah. I think that you mentioned like having boundaries, and a scenario popped in my head that I could see happening to myself. But, you know, one thing that I find, and this is in, it doesn't seem to really matter the profession or industry, but the, you know, getting calls, emails, texts outside of business hours and expecting to respond to that. And I feel really strongly about this because even in veterinary medicine, where yes, there's things that are life and death, I would argue that there's not really much I'm going to be able to do at my house that someone who's in the clinic would be able to do more for me. So So that was, because this is something I never did, was setting those boundaries, but I could see, you know, you work all day, you're exhausted, you come home, you're going to try and you're like, all right, I'm feeling good. I'm going to do a little, you know, training session with my dog. And then all of a sudden your phone is ringing, then you're getting texts and you're getting interrupted. And now you're like, well, the heck with it. You know, now I'm frustrated. I'm overstimulated and overwhelmed. And now not only does my dog feel that, but now I can't really connect like I would like in that training process too. I could see that happening on so many levels.
Yeah, totally. And that's where it would then stop you being motivated, because, and then you would feel guilty because you're not doing it. And it, again, you're in that little cycle, aren't you? Like I mentioned, that's why this podcast is called The Mindful Dog Parent, because it's trying to create that understanding and awareness. Self-care is important, and you have to then be able to show up. And if you don't do all these things, you can't show up. So you do end up stuck in those cycles. So it's really important. And I feel so passionately about it. So it makes total sense. We've touched on guilt a little bit. It might be good to go into how guilt feeds into burnout a little bit, maybe in a little bit more detail, if there's anything more that you can add to that. So there are so many dog parents that feel like they're not doing enough. And that tends to be a big thing that I hear. A lot of people feel alone in that as well. So they think, I'm the only one that feels like this, I'm not good enough. And then that guilt starts to happen. So how does that specifically feed into burnout?
Yeah, I think too, with everything being on social media, like we hear this a lot, but you know, you're seeing really someone's highlight reel. So we can easily watch someone that maybe is doing like all this training with their dog and their dog's really well behaved. And we're like, oh, I couldn't even take 10 minutes yesterday, you know, to do that training. And so the guilt spiral starts. But I think that we, you know, obviously we have to recognize that that is just that. It's the highlight reel. It doesn't show, you know, what that person is going through and all the training that got them there. But I think guilt makes it seem like, yes, it's very isolating. Like we think that maybe we're the only ones that feel this way. The problem is guilt tends to be that catalyst for burnout, because we feel guilty that maybe at work we can't, you know, we should take on this other project because our coworker did. And oh gosh, my boss is going to think I'm not a good employee, so I'm going to go above and beyond. And we're just always overextending ourselves. Not necessarily, it feels in the moment, it's from a place of, I want to be, like, we think we want to be a good person, we want to be helpful, but it's really, I don't want this person to think negatively of me. And that's really why that guilt comes in. So it really does seep into many different areas of our life. And so we overcommit at work, in our personal life. We don't put ourselves first because it feels selfish. And I do think there's some degree of society that's like, wow, if you're not helping this friend or doing this and doing this on your day off, then somehow you're a bad person or you're just like not a good friend. And so there's more guilt there. So really recognizing when we're feeling guilty, instead of looking outward of what can I do to make that guilt go away, looking, I think, sometimes inward of why, what am I making that mean about myself? And that's where I think we can get to the root of it, because yes, it will definitely spiral into that burnout for sure.
Yeah, totally. Think it's a big part of it, because guilt is a conversation that I have a lot. And I had a conversation yesterday with someone who said they feel guilty because they're doing something or not doing something for their puppy specifically. And yeah, so it, and I've been guilty, been guilty of feeling guilty. So yeah. I know what it's like. It is hard. So we've touched on how dogs can pick up on how we're feeling as well. So I think that is a big point that we want to highlight. So from my perspective, that's just something I want everyone to have that awareness of. So if you're listening and you're thinking about how you're feeling and you're kind of resonating with some of these feelings that we're talking about, I want you guys to kind of start to think about how that could be impacting that relationship with your dog, and what your dog might be picking up and maybe walking on eggshells a little bit, maybe because you're a bit snappy or you're feeling on edge quite a lot of the time, and that could be potentially what's happening there. So it's something that I want to mention because it is a big one as well. We can talk about now about kind of some of those things where we're looking at like recovery and support. I think that's going to be a good place to move to. So if someone thinks, okay, some of these things feel really familiar, I think maybe I am burnt out, I do have these feelings, I don't now know what to do, what would you say is the first step that someone should take if they suspect they're burnt out?
Yeah, so I think there's different levels of this. I would say, because a lot of people that are burnt out are these high achieving type A perfectionists. And so we're in our minds, because I did this, we're like, all right, I'm going to tackle this thing. I'm going to make a to-do list. I'm going to, like, we're just adding on more things. So step one is your homework is, what can I take off my plate? Like, and don't add another one in there, because I've done that too. So, and that can look like I delegate it to someone else, or my spouse does that instead, my kids do it. Or is this thing really important? Because sometimes there's things that we do really 100%, we put a lot of effort into it, but their importance isn't that high, but it takes time. So take one thing off your list of things to do this week. And that's why I don't, when I work with clients, I'm not like, all right, let's take everything off the list, because that's jarring to our nervous system too. Oh,
I'm a list person, so that's just that would probably send me a bit dysregulated as well.
Yeah, oh, for sure. So it's kind of doing that one thing and sitting with how that feels and where that opens up some time in your schedule. Don't try to fill it. Don't try to make it mean something. Just kind of recognize what comes up for you with that, because sometimes that's a little clue into really where, for every specific person, where that healing starts too. And it'll be a little bit different for everyone.
Yeah, totally. And I'm thinking in terms of dog parents and families, and you're saying kind of delegate. So again, it's something that I see a lot from clients. So they kind of take everything on themselves, and there is no delegation, because they might be a bit of, like me, you want to be in control. You want to feel in control of all the things. It's like, if you've got a new puppy, you can delegate feeding the puppy their breakfast to one of your children if they're obviously old enough to do that. How much involvement has your spouse got with looking after, feeding, training, all the things? It's such an important thing that I do, and I've had that conversation with clients. I believe you are doing too many things and you have too much on your plate, and you really need to talk, have a conversation. Does your partner know how you feel about it? Have you had this conversation with your partner about these things and how you're feeling? And sometimes they say no. And that's the first step. That is the thing that I say, right, I want you to have a conversation with your partner and tell them how you're feeling. Tell them what you told me. And if there's tears, like there has been with me as well, then that is really showing your partner how you feel. It isn't you nagging them. It's not you moaning at them. It's you genuinely are at this point where I need help from you right now. And if you don't have that family unit around you to be able to do that, is there a professional that you can get in? Is there a dog walker that you can get to come and walk your dog? Is there the daycare situation? So I know your dog goes to daycare. Is that going to be something that you can do for half a day? There's always something even if your family unit isn't there and you haven't got that network, build one around you in other ways. And I think that's definitely a big one.
I think too, one thing that you hit the nail on the head, I always tell people, like, if there's an area that you're feeling resentment in, sometimes it's really important to focus on, okay, why is that? Because I've had conversations with people and they're like, well, I'm stressed and my spouse doesn't help in this. And I've said the same thing. Like, so have you verbalized this? I'm like, well, no. And so that is where I find is the sticking point, because they're like, no, it's either a variety of things. And this could be, you know, you're talking with your friend or you're trying to set a boundary with your boss or whatever. And it's like, we know what we're supposed to do, but it's uncomfortable because either we're asking for help, which seems foreign to us. We feel like asking for help somehow might feel like we're a failure. And again, we're making it mean something about ourselves. But really coming to the point of, I need help with this, goes across a lot better than, I can't believe you didn't walk the dog today. You know, like, we almost think they're supposed to read our mind, and it seems very obvious, but I run into that a lot, and I'm sure you do too.
Totally do, yeah. That's why I asked that question, have you had this conversation with them yet? Have you told them what you've told me? Because I can see how much it's impacting you. And I want your partner to see that as well, to be able to kind of give you that support, even if it's just taking, like you say, that one thing, take that one thing off your plate and it will make such a difference. So, yeah, and I've been guilty of doing all the things and not telling my partner what I need from him as well in the past, but I am much better at that now. So it really helps when everybody's on the same page. You've got kind of children who are old enough to get involved. And I'm sure, and the way I train and the way I teach, the way I coach is through fun. And there are always activities, even if there are things that only you can do, like your dog is a big dog and you want to do some loose lead walking, that's your job. But your child could get involved with other aspects of training. They could teach them a sit. They could teach them to lie down. They could teach them to settle. They can teach them. There's other things that are less intense, but the kids can get involved with and still enjoy. And that's training. That's training. It's about having fun and not like I say, that drill sergeant, because that makes a difference, I think, as well, having a bit of fun.
Yeah, I will say too, in clinical practice, when I would walk into an exam room with a pet, it was, you always knew who did most of the training or were in charge of feeding in the house, because that dog only listened to that person. And so that's great if the person's there. If it's not, and you know, sometimes the spouse is bringing it in and they can't control the dog just because that's not, you know, so I think having the whole family being a part of that dog, new puppy, whatever that is, makes it very cohesive. And when they get into stressful events, yeah, they're not just focused on that one person. They have their go-to people. I think that helps immensely.
Yeah, totally. Thinking about the person listening right now, and if they're thinking, this is me, I think this is me, I think everything that you've said makes total sense to me, what one gentle action can they take today, as well as having that conversation and starting to do some of that delegation? What's something that they could do that's gentle, as well as on top of that delegation activity and that conversation piece?
Yeah, I think a big one that I love, and it seems simple, but we don't all do it, is that in moments of stress, whatever that is, whatever, you know, if that's training with your dog or if it's work, we get so caught up in like, oh my gosh, this is stressing me out, or I have this and this and this. And half of those things aren't in our control. So really focusing on, like, when you're feeling that squeeze and that stress and you feel like you have an elephant, you know, on your chest, ask yourself, okay, which one of these things that I'm really stressed, is this in my control? Because if it's, you know, the neighbor down the street, if his dog's barking at your dog, probably don't have much control over that. If you sent a project into your boss and you're like, I don't know if he's going to like it. That's, oh my gosh, then this could happen. It's like, you don't have any more control over that, you know? So that it still might feel uncomfortable, and it doesn't, I definitely don't think it takes away like anxiety 100%, but it gives you a little bit easier perspective to really almost like shake yourself a little bit and be like, I actually can't do anything about this right now. So at the very least, put this on the bottom of my list of things to do, you know, is to ask yourself, do I have control over this?
Yes. And I've linked into that kind of feeling like you need to be in control kind of thing just a little bit ago, but it made me straight away think of the let them theory.
Yes. So
that's the thing.
Love that.
It's that, isn't it? That's what it is. It's let them. It's something that isn't within your control. Let them. That's something you either can't control anymore. Like you say, if there's something that you've done everything that you can now and it's out of your hands, or you can't control it full stop. So telling yourself, having that awareness, I don't have control of this right now. And then let them do that. Let me do this instead.
Yes.
So I've read the book, Mel Robbins, if everyone doesn't know what the let them theory is. Anyone listening wants to know, it's the let them theory from Mel Robbins. And that's really helped me with boundary setting and taking control of the things I can take control of and not holding on to the things that I can't control. Totally helped. So yeah, I think that would be probably the action. Go find out about the let them theory and start to put it into practice. And it's reminding me to still take action on that one. So it's still something I have to try and keep implementing, just like the boundary setting. If you're not a natural boundary setter, it's something you do have to keep revisiting.
That actually, I love the let them theory. It's when, especially for burnt out people that feel overwhelmed, I felt like when I read the book, it was less for me to do. Like it gave you permission to do less. And that was cool. But what I've also found is talking to people that if you read the book, and it was, you know, I was a little bit further along in my personal development, but people that might be starting out, they get a little bit hung up on, okay, if someone did something rude or disrespectful to me, they're like, how do I just let them? I'm like, no. You're not putting your energy towards being angry, upset, rude back to them. You're redirecting it. So I always tell people, it doesn't mean that someone who is rude or disrespectful, like it's okay and we quote unquote let them get away with it. It's not. It's redirecting to what I can control. So I've noticed some people get hung up on that, and I can see where that is. And they're like, yeah, but this person was so rude. And I'm like, yeah, but can you go and literally change their reaction and their emotions? No. So, but it's so empowering. Reading that book, you feel better because you actually have to kind of do less. It was the feeling I got.
Yeah. And it is that piece, isn't it? That extra let me bit at the end. So it's let them, it's not let them get away with it. Let them be rude. Let them, it is, you can't control their reaction, but you can control what you do next step. So I'm glad you've added that in just to remind, to remind them. We've come to the end of the conversation. I think we've got a lot out of it, and I hope that you are gaining a lot of insight and kind of tips and things that you can take away as a listener, and you can listen back and share it with anybody that you think also would resonate or find it useful. So Amber, where can people connect with you and learn more about what you do? And I'll put them in the show notes as well, so people can go find you there.
Perfect. Yes, thank you. Yeah, I'm over on Instagram at the Stress and Burnout Coach. There's underscores between those words, or my website is thestressandburnoutcoach.com. And you can find me on Facebook. I'm just under my name, Amber Parks. And if you're, I think if you're experiencing anything like this and you just don't know where to start, or you don't know what coaching looks like for you, you know, I like to get on a call and just have a conversation with people and see, where are you at? Is that something I can help you with? And if so, you know, we kind of talk about what that looks like. So sometimes that first step is the hardest, but when you're so burnt out and exhausted and overwhelmed, and then we look at our pets and we want to help them, you know, taking that first step, I always think, because we're such animal lovers, I'm always like, what can I do best for my dog or my cat? And that would be, I think, it.
Yeah, I would resonate with that, definitely. As a fellow animal lover and dog mom and all the things, like, passionate about animals. So if there's something that I can do to help my dogs more, asking for help is a big step, but it's definitely a big, important, good, positive step, because we've both done that ourselves. We've come from that background of perfectionism and all the things, the anxiety and the burnout, and we asked for help when we realized where we were at and what was happening, and we're still working on it. I'm still working on it personally, but I think I'm in a much, much more regulated, empowered, positive place than I was even just a few years ago. So definitely, thank you so much for joining me. It's been really, 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 really helpful. And I'm sure we'll keep in touch and we can chat again on the podcast if my listener finds it really useful, and we can have another chat and go deeper into specific areas. So thank you so much.
Yes, yes, I love this. Yeah, I would love to come back, and thank you for the opportunity, and I hope to see you guys next time.
Yeah, all right. Take care, guys.
Thanks so much for tuning in to The Mindful Dog Parent. If this episode gave you something to think about, or it just made you feel a little less alone, I would love it if you followed the show and shared it with another dog parent who needs it. You'll find all the links and resources mentioned in the show notes at lavendergardenanimalservices.co.uk/podcast, and I would love to stay in touch, so head there if you want to explore more ways to work with me or get support.